Hello Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of Bulls HQ, and thank you for joining me yet again this week for a draft day edition of the podcast. Happy to be here. The fact that it is draft day, we're recording this pretty much during the second round. The draft is over. The Bulls have made their picks. They've brought in big Duke center Wendell Carter Jr. and Boise State wing Chandler Hutchinson. And joining me for today's podcast, I've got Bulls J on the line, or J Pat rather, at Bulls J on Twitter. Jay, how are you feeling about this draft, my man? I'm pretty content. I'm pretty happy about it, which is a weird feeling. I didn't expect to be feeling like this.
Yeah, I think content is a good way to put it. Like, I'm not, like, thrilled. Like, I'm not, like, super excited. But I think content is a good way to put it. The guys they picked, Wendell Carter Jr., Chandler Hutchinson, seem like solid picks. Maybe not the most flashy picks, but just players that should be able to come in, be solid players. And the Bulls, I know a lot of Bulls fans wanted them to go for the home run option, and I totally understand that. I know a lot of Bulls fans loved Michael Porter Jr., and he was there for the Bulls to take, but we also saw Michael Porter Jr. fall all the way to 14, so there was clearly something really crazy going on with those medicals. He had the back surgery, and he had the setback with his hip right before the draft, so clearly teams were scared off the medicals. The Bulls pass on him. They took a guy in Wendell Carter Jr. who fits the team pretty well, fits playing next to Larry Markkanen pretty well. And Hutchinson is a guy that the Bulls were rumored to have made a promise to a while back. I know some people may not like that they maybe picked out a guy that early and maybe didn't adjust as the draft played out. I mean, still, he seems like a solid pick. We'll talk more about these guys a bit more as we go. But, I mean, overall, I think the Bulls did pretty well today. And, yeah, so I think they took a decent step forward. Now we'll see where they go from here.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't know about you, but I'm sure I'm not alone in this thinking, but it kind of seems like John Paxson has been in control of the Bulls pretty much all season. I know titles may necessarily haven't changed. I know the team themselves have, I guess, been pretty much portraying the fact that nothing has really changed. Everyone has an equal voice in the front office, but Paxson has been the figurehead for this organization. He's been front and center, and there's no way of really confirming this, but this draft, it feels like a typical Paxson draft, and I say that in a positive way because typically throughout Paxson's tenure as general manager, the Bulls have made some pretty good picks. They've made some safe picks, typically have gone with guys that have a good foundation, high character guys who can be two-way players and, you know, have high floors. That necessarily or may not necessarily lead to a superstar talent, but it does lead to a good pick. And that's why I guess I'm kind of content with Wendell Carter Jr. because I think he's going to be exactly that. And in that sense, I feel like this is a typical Paxson draft from yesteryear. Do you sort of feel the same?
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, safe guys that'll come in and contribute right away. The four-year guy in Chandler Hutchinson. So I definitely agree with you with that notion. And said, hopefully it works out. Because like I mentioned, like going for, instead of taking maybe a risk on certain players that more perceived upside, they went for these guys that will just solid fits and guys that maybe have higher floor. So I think that notion is quite correct.
Yeah, and I think we'll use the word safe to describe both Wendell Carter Jr. and the pick of Chandler Hutchinson, but the word safe doesn't necessarily mean bad as well, and I think it has that somewhat that connotation as well, given that, you know, there were maybe some higher ceiling guys sort of floating around there in the first round at both spots that the Bulls could have taken, I guess. You already mentioned Michael Porter Jr., but there were some options there in this with pick 22. Maybe the Bulls could have taken a flyer on someone there rather than going the typical safe route of taking a four-year college player in Chandler Hutchinson, a 22-year-old. So whilst I sort of accept that the picks themselves are safe, I don't necessarily see them as bad picks either. So I think you can have the best of both worlds. And that's why I'm content with this draft. And like I said, I wasn't expecting to feel that way. I didn't know which way the Bulls were going to go. I assumed that it was going to be a Porter Jr. Hutchinson draft. I got one of those picks right, I guess. But to your point, that let's talk about Michael Porter Jr. first, at least, because I know there's going to be a large faction of the fan base that he's probably upset that Porter Jr. isn't a Bull right now, but given the way that it played out and the fact that he fell to 14, which is probably something not many people really expected to happen, it seems like the Bulls have made, at least for now, the right decision in bypassing Porter Jr. because for him to fall to 14, there must be some red flags there with his injuries, back injury there.
It was really funny because the ESPN like a month ago they were doing like those draft specials like every week, and like the first one they did with their mock, he fell to like 15, and it was like, I know he's got these red flags, but like that just seems absolutely nuts. Like no way that happens. And then he freaking fell to 14, and there were initially like whatever in the last couple of weeks, it was just kind of all over the place when he had that setback with the hip, but then the reporting was, oh, like, it seems like he's Porter Jr. still possibly on the rise. Like, there were the rumblings about the Kings possibly taking him at number two, which, like, seemed crazy. And then there was the talk about how the Bulls were kind of a soft floor, that if he did follow the Bulls at number seven, that they would definitely take him. But then as we got closer to the draft and we came in today, I know KC reported Bulls' interest in, like, the big guys, like Bamba and Bagley, and possibly moving up. But then he's like, there really hasn't been much talk about Porter Jr. going to the Bulls. And as we saw today, he fell past the Bulls. The Bulls went with Carter instead, and then he ended up falling way past him. And I know there was an article on The Athletic today, which is really funny, about the Michael Porter Jr. hive with Bulls fans. And, like, he just gained – because he was working out in Chicago, he kind of showed a lot of love to the Bulls in this pre-draft process. Like, it seems like a lot of Bulls fans got on his bandwagon, and just his general potential, because he came into college before the back injury as, like, the number one or number two prospect. He was a guy who you ideally thought as, oh, he's 6'10", 6'11", wing, stud, score. Like, here's your number one scoring option, that number one potential superstar that will take this rebuild over the top. But with the back injury, and there were other red flags too besides the injury, there's stuff with the ball stopping defensively, maybe not enough of a playmaker, some of his personality things. I think there were rumors about him maybe not being the best teammate. So, like, there were a lot of red flags for this guy, as high as his potential was, which is why I would have been totally fine if they did take him, but like the fact that this was all out there, I'm also not super mad like some people are that they passed up on him. Who knows? Maybe him going to the Nuggets, that's kind of an intriguing situation with all the young talent they already have there. Maybe he does turn into that star player, but it's not like the Bulls are going to be the only team that's going to be kicking themselves. And then hopefully Carter is a good enough player where the Bulls won't actually be kicking themselves that they passed on him.
Yeah, I kind of agree. And you know, look, like I said before, I assumed Carter Jr. was coming to the Bulls. I had, you know, pretty much 800 words already typed up in a draft, assuming he was going to be a Bull ready to go. And then I pretty much had to scrap it straight away because they obviously passed on him, as did a lot of teams. And I think, you know, if he had gone eighth or ninth, then I kind of understand why some people would be annoyed. But the fact that he fell to 14th, I think it's justifiable as to why they bypassed him. But you know, time will tell what the right decision was, obviously. But with Porter Jr. at least. But let's focus on the Bulls now and the picks that they did make. And let's start with the prize pick seven. The Bulls taking Wendell Carter Jr. Let's focus on him for the moment. Most fans probably know what he brings in terms of skill set, but how do you see him sort of fitting into the team once he joins us, I guess, during the offseason, heading into August, September, with the team itself, but heading into Summer League as well in July?
Yeah, so I guess just to start with Carter, kind of when I was looking at this draft, looking at the players that they could take, I kind of settled on him as the guy that was kind of like the best mixture of upside and then just like safe pick. So like if you looked at like Porter Jr. and Trae Young were probably like the high upside guys, and then you look at guys like Carter, Mikal Bridges, the other Bridges, like those were kind of the more safe picks. So I think Carter is the best option of kind of best of both worlds there, because while some people think that, oh, Carter doesn't have that much upside, blah, 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 like he was like, I believe he was like a, when I looked at the ESPN high school recruit rankings, he was like number five. Like, so it's like he was way up there, and he went to Duke. His numbers weren't huge, but he was playing with Bagley. He was playing with Grayson Allen. So like he was playing with a ton of other talent. So I do wonder like and he still put up 13-9. He shot 40% from three. He had a couple of assists per game, which is really nice, that kind of playmaking from the big. So maybe in the NBA in a little more open system, maybe he'll be able to flourish a bit more. In terms of a fit, I think he's an ideal fit next to Markkanen. In terms of, like I mentioned, his three-point shooting, he shot over 40%. The volume was not that high, but he also shot pretty well from the three-point line. I think it was around 74%. So the fact that he shot over 40% from three and 74% from the line shows that you hope that his shooting will translate, even if it doesn't. He's not a knockdown shooter from three. If he's at least a threat from three, and the Bulls can play a five out while playing two big men. And like I mentioned, his passing as well. So if you have that kind of skill set in your front court, I think that's pretty exciting. Even with the league trending smaller, I think that those guys can play really well together. It also gives them options when they want to go smaller. You could play either Carter or Lowry at the five when those guys are on the bench. So I think having that kind of versatile skill set in the front court is really exciting with how the Bulls want to play. Defensively, there will be some concerns. Carter, he does have like a almost 7'5 wingspan. He's a strong guy. So I think guarding like the post, being a rim protector, I believe he averaged around 2 blocks a game, should be pretty good. There are concerns about his lateral quickness, and him and Lowry might not be the best if teams are going to attack them with pick and roll and when teams play smaller. But I think that they might be able to mitigate that if Carter can come along as at least a solid rim protector, and if they get Chris Dunn's a good defender. We'll see about Hutchinson, and if they add other good defenders on the wing. Obviously, Zach LaVine's a terrible defender, but I think that maybe they can be able to get by and make a really good defense with this. They still have a long way to go. They were a terrible defensive team last year, but I still think just overall him and Lowry is a pretty nice pairing up front.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And the reason why I really like this pick is the fact that I don't have a lot of questions with the pick itself, or maybe a lot of questions in terms of what I think Wendell Carter's, I guess, career arc might look like in that sense. So I don't necessarily think he's going to be, you know, a dominant player, you know, a multi-time All-Star. He might get there a couple of times. I see him more as like a, I don't know, maybe a 16, 17 point per game type player with, you know, 11, 12 rebounds. Maybe that's what his prime looks like. And that's a very good player at pick 7. But what I really like about Wendell Carter Jr. is the fact that not necessarily what he brings himself, but what in terms of his own skill set, but what his presence may be able to unlock for others. And I think that's the most exciting thing about adding a guy like Wendell Carter Jr. We've talked about his dominant rebounding, the fact that he can sort of protect the rim. And I think we sort of underrate the fact that Robin Lopez was so critical for a guy like Lauri Markkanen, because he was able to do those things for Lowry and allowed him to focus on offense. And in that sense, I sort of see Wendell Carter Jr. being a younger version of Robin Lopez in terms of those skills. And having a guy to pair with Lowri Markkanen for the next 10 or so years that can do all those things for Lowry and allow him to focus his energy on offense, that's kind of a tantalizing proposition. And, you know, thinking about that for the wings on this team, guys like Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine, they need all the help that they can get in terms of getting good looks at the basket. They're not naturally gifted in terms of attacking the ring and converting at the rim. So having a big guy like Wendell Carter Jr., who's a good screener, but maybe more importantly, a really good shooter and projects to be maybe one of the best big man shooters in this draft, suddenly Fred Hoiberg has two bigs who project to be really good three-point shooters who can space the floor and allow these guys to get into the lane. So from a fit perspective, even though it is a safe pick, and you know there is like the whole question about, you know, maybe the league is downsizing, and can, you know, Carter Jr. and Lowry sort of stay on the court against the likes of Golden State and Houston and these sorts of teams? I don't even want to worry about that. Worry about that sort of situation at this point, because
Bulls are so far away from that.
And I'm kind of really content and just focused on what Wendell Carter can do to sort of help unlock guys like Dunn and LaVine, which is kind of important and something you need to factor in with this pick itself, and, you know, not just concern yourself a bit with who the player you're drafting this year is. So whilst I get the whole logic of taking the best player, the guy with the highest possible ceiling, I think you need to consider fit, and that's why I'm quietly content right now.
Yeah, I totally agree with you basically on all those points. I know one of the comps for Carter has been Al Horford. If he can become Al Horford, I mean, that's terrific. I know a lot of people, I feel like Al Horford's really underrated by the general public because he doesn't put up huge numbers and sometimes he disappears in games and you don't always notice him. But I'm just thinking about how important Al Horford was for the Celtics this year and how important he was for the Hawks all these years. Well, he didn't put up huge scoring numbers. If Carter can be a guy that kind of replicates some of that stuff and turns into a guy like Al Horford, even if he isn't that good, if he's like a poor man's Al Horford, that can still be a really good player for the Bulls long term. And he can do so many of those little things as well. So, yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly.
And another reason why I like the pick as well, and why I don't mind the idea of, again, taking that safe route, even though I like the pick, is the fact that I'm not really super high on this 2019 draft. So if the Bulls, in theory, took someone like Porter Jr., and, you know, his back does prove to be an issue, for next season and beyond, if the team was to be bad again, I'm not necessarily super excited about the 2019 draft. And I know that's been bandied around in the sense that, you take a risk on a high ceiling guy. If it doesn't work out, well, you can just go back to the draft the year after. And I think that's all well and good, but I'm not sure next year's draft is slated to be as good as this one was, or even last year's was. So again, taking a good player who you're confident on being a good player, I think is kind of the right decision, given that there's questions that remain around guys like Dunn and Levine. The Bulls just need to get good talent on this roster and guys that you're confident will be good. And I'm really confident in Carter Jr. being that.
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, they're just the Bulls in terms of next season. I'm actually arguing with somebody right now. The Bulls still have such a long way to go. And even if Carter is who knows if he'll be that good next year. Like, the Bulls have such a long way to go that I think just this next season is going to have to just be, I think they need to do whatever they can to develop this young core that they have. I don't think they should worry about winning. I know some Bulls fans will think that, oh, maybe this team could be like a legitimate playoff team next year. Like, I think that'd be crazy. Maybe they get super lucky with their development and that. But I think right now with the additions they made, what they made today, they should go into next year just really looking to develop these young guys. And like you said, how Carter can help some of these other young guys as well. And I'd be totally fine if, and I guess another thing with next year is if the Bulls even are just like, they're still bad, but if even they're like a little better this year than they were last year with the way the lottery rules are next year, if they get in the lottery and maybe they get lucky again and they get a stud at the top of next year's draft, I think that'd be pretty awesome. So I'm definitely on, I wouldn't say I'm not on team tank next year, even after this pretty solid draft this year. I'm totally fine with them just looking full blown young development with their young core and hope they get another high pick next year. And then maybe they can take a big step forward in 2019-20.
Yeah, no, I certainly agree. I think they should definitely be playing the young guys as much minutes as they can. And, you know, if the result of that is a good draft pick, then so be it. But at the same time, you're still getting minutes into the core and heading towards 2019 free agency that way. So I think we're pretty aligned in that sense. But I think where the Bulls are headed is quite a good one. Hopefully they don't go too crazy in 2018 free agency and try to hit a home run now and try to sign a veteran or two to really help, you know, push towards the playoffs. I don't think that would be ideal. They don't necessarily need to speed that up, even though we like this pick here at number 7 with Wendell Carter Jr. But before we talk Chandler Hutchison, maybe we can talk about or remain focused on this pick 7 and maybe not the pick itself, but I guess maybe the fact that the Bulls may have been a team that could have traded up. I know there was a lot of rumors going around even before the Bulls made the pick that they could have been a team that was looking to trade up to 3 or 4. Obviously, we saw Luka Doncic and Trae Young get exchanged there by the Atlanta Hawks and the Dallas Mavericks at the top of the draft. I'm pretty sure Cody Westerlund had a piece there or a tweet that suggested the Bulls were trying to get in on that maybe. They didn't get it done, and obviously they opted for Wendell Carter Jr., which I guess I wouldn't say pissed off people, but, you know, didn't inspire a lot of fans, the fact that Luka Doncic was able to be moved. But what are your thoughts on the Bulls, one, trying to move up, and the fact that, you know, they couldn't get it done, and the fact that maybe they could have given what the particulars of that deal were?
Yeah, I thought it was smart for them to at least look to try, especially with the Hawks looking to trade back and not being sold on Doncic. I mean, if the Bulls would have been able to get Luka Doncic out of this draft at the number 3 pick, I think that would have been pretty awesome. And the Hawks, they traded 3, so they basically traded Doncic for the 5th pick, which was Trae Young, and then the Mavericks sent them next year top 5 protected, was that it?
Yeah, I believe so. I don't know if it converts to something thereafter, like if it doesn't meet those protections, but we'll probably learn something more about that in the coming days, I'm sure, but that does appear to be the particulars as to what we know right now.
I'm not totally sure what the Bulls could have done that would have beat that. It looks like the Bulls did not want to send any future draft picks, which I guess makes sense. If their plan is to just be super patient and have that pick available next year to them that they want to use. They could have obviously put protections on the pick, but obviously that would have meant the Hawks going back even further to number 7, and they might not have been able to get Trae Young there. So maybe they were really asking for a huge amount. So I guess I think it's smart that the Bulls were trying. I guess we don't really know right now. Maybe we'll come out what the Bulls were offering to try to move up, and I guess we'll see about that. So I guess I can't be super mad about not knowing what exactly they offered. I guess I appreciate the effort, and it would have been awesome to have Doncic, but it just didn't work out, which, I mean, ultimately it's totally fine. I'm glad, like, I hope they would, if they, I guess one of the big disaster things is if they would have traded up and done something stupid. Like, because I saw that they were, I think Casey mentioned about they were trading up and thinking about taking, like, Bagley, and I would not have been happy with that. If they would have, like, obviously they wouldn't have taken Porter, but, and I know there was rumors about Bamba as well, and I was kind of hoping Bamba might fall to them, because I think Bamba would have been a pretty neat boomer bust possible option at number 7, but the way it played out, they made the effort, didn't happen. Taking Carter was fine.
Yeah, I kind of agree, and there was never really any rumors of the Bulls being interested in Doncic, which, I mean, we can spend probably a podcast in itself maybe,
yeah.
Talking about the fact that they weren't necessarily scouting or super interested in Doncic, but, you know, I understand why some fans may be thinking that it was possible for the Bulls to maybe get in on the whole Doncic thing, and maybe the Bulls could have had the assets to get themselves someone like Luka Doncic. But the real kicker in this whole thing is the fact that the Hawks wanted Trae Young. And I'm not sure if Trae Young sort of falls to 7 if the Bulls do give up pick 7 in this sort of swap with the Hawks. They clearly wanted Trae Young, and they probably wanted him before the Orlando Magic were making their pick, who that team desperately needs a point guard. So in the sense that the Hawks were to trade Doncic to the Bulls for pick 7 and an unprotected pick of their own and maybe a player or two just to sweeten the deal, there's no guarantee that Trae Young is sitting there for the Hawks at pick 7, which is, I guess, why the entire trade went down. So that's probably why this whole trade itself was never going to happen with Atlanta. And like you said, I'm glad they didn't trade up to number 2 there for Marvin Bagley. I think that would have been a disaster.
Yeah, that would have been silly. And so it was, I feel like a lot of people were kind of hoping that Bamba might fall to them, to the Bulls at 7. Like I said, it's finally to Carter. I think Bamba would have been really intriguing. But the fact that the Magic took Bamba, I think it was just kind of hilarious. Because looking at that roster, they have a million big men. Obviously, they're going to try to get, like, some, like, Biombo is useless. Vucevic is probably on the way out. But they've drafted, like, 3 or 4. They drafted Isaac last year. They have Aaron Gordon coming up. So I'm just kind of really curious what the Magic's plan is. I obviously, this is a little sidebar, but I mean, that team has just been such a hot mess since Dwight left. And now they have like a million big men. So it was kind of funny that they took Bamba and didn't take a point guard. But once Trae Young went at 5, I guess they didn't like Sexton or Shea Gilgeous-Alexander that much. And then the Bulls ended up with Carter because of it.
Yeah, exactly, and like we've been saying, it's not the worst result. And
nope.
You know, whilst I would have been happy with Mo Bamba, I guess his best form or his best potential, you know, his fit in that sense would have been really good for the team. But there's no guarantee that he gets there. I'm less confident of Bamba getting to there than I am Wendell Carter Jr. Even though I think maybe someone like Bamba's ceiling is a little bit higher, given what he could be defensively, both inside and outside, but. Having said that, I'm not too concerned that we missed out on Mo Bamba, and like you said, given that he's gone to the Magic, it's I sort of fear with how his development may actually go, given that he's ended up on not the greatest of organizations. But look, like we've been saying, I'm pretty happy with how they've played out, and I'm not sure if Bamba may have unlocked players like Chris Dunn or even Zach LaVine in the same way that hopefully Wendell Carter Jr. can. But look, let's move on from the big that we did take, and let's talk the wing that we sort of, the Bulls selected there at pick 22. We're talking about Chandler Hutchinson, who was long rumored to be a Chicago Bull. It's probably about a month ago now, I want to say, maybe even 3 weeks. There had been a rumor floating around that a team had made a guarantee to Chandler Hutchinson that they would take him with their first round pick. There was a few teams linked to Hutchinson. I believe the Nets, the Pacers, as well as the Bulls, and maybe even the Blazers as well, were one of the 4 teams that were mentioned there to be in on Chandler Hutchinson. But it was the Bulls that took him at 22, giving credence to the fact that they were the team that gave him the guarantee. So let's talk Chandler Hutchinson in terms of what he can bring to the team, but let's also maybe start on the fact that they made a guarantee to a player with pick 22. What are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, it's, I guess, kind of interesting. I know some people may not be thrilled. I think I mentioned this earlier, that if you make a promise that early in the draft process, like today, kind of shut things down in terms of like scouting as many other guys. Like, did that? I know somebody asked me on Twitter, like, do you think that shut them down, like looking to move up and make trades? I'm not necessarily sure. I know that they asked Paxton or Gar, or either, whatever, both of them in their press conference afterwards, like, did you, I think they asked him about that promise, and I think Pax played it coy, and it was like, oh, like, we really liked him for a long time, but he, like, kind of deflected whether they actually did, which leads me to believe that they did actually make that promise. And I know I saw somebody also tweet, like, even a few picks before, that Hutchinson was happy, and it sounded like he was about to get picked. So it seems like that this had been in play for a while, and I think some of the reporters, I believe, mentioned that, yeah, it was basically the Bulls who made that promise. So it seems like they did make that promise. I mean, whether that actually did stop them from looking to do other things, I would hope not. I guess you never really know. But, I mean, like, in terms of, and then in terms of him, I guess, moving past the promise as an actual player, I mean, he seems like he fits in as a guy who could play some small forward. He is a senior four-year player, so maybe the upside's a little bit capped there, but he had a huge senior year. He averaged like 20 points a game. It was like 8 rebounds, 3 or 4 assists. His jump shot improved over his last couple of years. It does seem like his jumper might still be a bit of a work in progress, and we'll see if it translates, because it was not very good his first couple of years in college, and he did make improvements. So, I mean, he seems like a really solid, maybe, bench guy. Maybe he's a guy that can slide into the starting lineup, but, I mean, overall, like, the fact, I mean, he seems like a solid guy to make a promise to. Whether that, I hope that it did not stop them from exploring other things. And I would think not, but I guess you never totally know.
Yeah, exactly. And that's my concern with it, that the fact that obviously they've been scouting for however long, that you know, Chandler Hutchinson may have been on their radar for quite a while, but they've obviously been scouting a lot of other prospects throughout the year. So it's not like they made a guarantee to Hutchinson in October or whatever it was. It was still after his season had concluded. They'd seen the body of work of every player, but having said that, it's still kind of odd to make a guarantee to a player in the, you know, in the range that they were picking there at pick 22, because there was a few guys that are in that range that I think can still be good players, and the guy I wanted was off the board. Tibbs and the Minnesota Timberwolves took
Okogie. Yeah.
They took Okogie, so I can't really blame the Bulls for taking Hutchinson over Okogie. He was off the board, but I guess the way I sum up this Hutchinson pick is the fact that I don't necessarily love the pick. I don't hate it. Whilst I don't like, I guess, the process in which he was a Bull, the result is he is a Chicago Bull, and I'm going to try my best not to hold, I guess, the organization's process of bringing him in against him, and just trying to evaluate the guy independently. And in some respects, I kind of think he might be the makeup version of Denzel Valentine, or at least what they hope Denzel Valentine could be, in the sense that he does a lot of things well, maybe nothing at an elite level, but can play make a little bit, can rebound, can shoot a little bit, and hopefully can play some defense, which obviously Denzel Valentine doesn't do that well. So in that sense, I kind of wonder if he's a bit of a redo of Denzel Valentine, and what that means for Valentine going into, you know, his next season and beyond, and if he's a guy that the Bulls maybe could possibly trade down the line.
Yeah, it seems like he's a bit more athletic than Valentine, maybe not quite the shooter. But I guess I am curious to see what Valentine's role will be, because I guess we'll see what the Bulls do with Justin Holiday. We'll see what they do with Valentine. We'll see what they do with Hutchinson. I mean, I guess these guys are all kind of, I mean, you can really never have too many wings. They obviously have to, I hope they re-sign David Nwaba. And so it'll be interesting to see how that wing rotation does play out. And I mean, because with Valentine, I know I've given him crap, and I just like to make fun of him sometimes, just because his self-awareness is kind of goofy. But I still think he's useful, and I would guess, I mean, he's a solid bench guy, and Hutchinson seems like he also would probably be a solid bench guy. I mean, maybe he ends up hitting potential a little bit more, and he ends up being a starter. I know, I think somebody asked Gar Pax today about, like, oh, well, like, if you look at, I guess, after these two picks, like would a lineup of Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, Chandler Hutchinson, Lowry, and Wendell Carter, like, would that be, like, their long-term, like, starting lineup in the next year or two? Like, and I would hope not, because that seems like that's missing at least one big time piece. Like, it seems like Hutchinson could be a guy, if he can slide in as a guy that is a solid player off the bench, you can add a bit of scoring, and like, it kind of, I mean, like you said, almost basically like a Valentine, and just kind of be a do it all wing off the bench. I think that would be totally fine. It would be nice if he hit a little more upside, if he maybe develops more of a as a shot creator. I know that he's got a little bit, obviously he was a primary option at Boise State, whether that translates as much. It seems like, based on the scouting reports I've read, he'll probably be more of a 3-and-D guy if that shooting does hold up. I mentioned that his shooting was really bad to start his college career. He got a bit better. We'll see if he can keep it up. So, yeah, I mean, basically, I guess you got to hope that he's maybe a little souped up version of Denzel, and he's a little better and a little bit more consistent, and a guy that can play at least better defensively as well, because Denzel is kind of not good in that area.
No, definitely not. It's definitely a work in progress. And I mean, in some respects, we'll probably see a lot of that lineup that you mentioned next season, or at least I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope there's not too many veterans playing, and then, you know, the team pouring minutes into those guys to maybe test the theory that is the starting lineup going forward. And maybe it is. Maybe Dunn and Levine do more than what we expect them to do. Maybe Hutchinson proves to be better than what we think. And even maybe Wendell Carter, maybe he goes on that Lowry path and exceeds his expectations as a 7th overall pick. But I guess we don't know that at the time right now, but I want them to test that theory at least, and maybe a best case scenario that could work out. But obviously time will tell if that's the case. I lean towards what you're saying though, that it's probably not going to be the case, but you know, hopefully, fingers crossed that it can be. But I think what I like about adding someone like Hutchinson and even Wendell Carter too is the fact that guys like Dunn and Zach LaVine and Lowry are going to be afforded, or at least allowed, the ability to be the primary guys on offense. I think, you know, you don't necessarily have to reconfigure or redesign your offensive system or your philosophy too much by adding guys like Wendell Carter Jr. or even Chandler Hutchinson, because I won't say they're necessarily role players. That's probably what Hutchinson will be. I hope, you know, Wendell Carter can be something a little bit more than a role player, but they seem to fit seamlessly into the offense straight away. Or at least I hope they will. Whereas, you know, if you take someone like Michael Porter Jr. or even someone like DeAndre Ayton, you're really remodeling your entire team and your entire offense. So I think that's something that's being a little bit underrated here as well. The fact that these guys will be able to slide into the rotation straight away, but the fact that they won't necessarily be taking away from Lowry, Markin, or even Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that was another one of the things, just bringing up Porter again, like as good as Porter might be, if they would have taken him, I would have been curious about just the fit with LaVine and with Dunn. We saw LaVine and Dunn kind of struggle playing together, and you add another potential ball stopping type. And then with that, we saw Lowry kind of take a back seat when Dunn and LaVine were playing together, and that group kind of really struggled. So that would have been interesting to see how that paired up. Now, like you mentioned, these guys kind of fit in a bit more seamlessly, whether that actually means that's going to be really good. They still might not have enough top level talent there, still might not be good enough defensively, but the fit, in terms of fit is definitely important, and the fit does seem a bit better.
Yeah, definitely. And whilst we can say that, it does really put the pressure or the onus on Lowry, Dunn, and LaVine to really improve and to take that next step, because obviously the Bulls haven't walked away with a premier talent. You know, even if they did grab Michael Porter Jr., if he doesn't develop the way some would have hoped, it doesn't guarantee you have that high ceiling guy. But at the moment, it doesn't appear that the Bulls have found that elite talent that they wanted to pair with guys like Lowry and Dunn and LaVine. So it does put the onus on those three, the first three guys that came over, I guess once the rebuild started this time 12 months ago, it puts the onus on those guys to really, I guess, exceed some of the expectations that are probably on them now. Most likely LaVine, who's obviously will be heading into free agency without a contract, but will probably likely be a Bull. So,
well, interesting. On that point, I don't know if this is sourced or if it's just kind of Friedel speculating, but he just tweeted that the near universal support LaVine once had internally is not there anymore. The Bulls will wait to see if he can find big money elsewhere first and then decide if they want to match, which is kind of interesting. I guess after that postseason press conference with John Paxson, I guess kind of hinting towards that when they talked about kind of like the market, kind of letting the market, whatever deal it's play out for itself. That's kind of interesting to see Friedel tweet that right now, that maybe the Bulls aren't quite as high on LaVine anymore as he initially was. So that's kind of interesting, and we'll see. And you could just kind of mention this whole group of this core moving forward. I think that's going to make this next upcoming year really exciting to see how these guys do develop internally, because it's going to be a huge year. If a guy like Chris Dunn, it's going to be his third season. He's already going to be, what, 24, 25 by the end of next year. If he doesn't take a next step forward, I mean, the Bulls might look, maybe if they look to trade him. LaVine, if he's back, he'll be on a big new contract. So he's going to have a lot to prove to earn that contract. Obviously, we both are big fans of Lowry. I think we think he's going to be a stud. But it's going to be a really interesting and kind of exciting year to see all these guys together now. And if they can take a big step forward, and if they don't, if the Bulls maybe try to shift and maybe kind of move some of these young guys around and try to get somebody else. And if they do take a step forward, if they're able to add that legit guy that takes them over the top. So I think it's going to be pretty exciting to see how these guys all play together and how if they can take that next step forward.
Yeah, definitely. If we thought the season that's just gone past was super important, and it was obviously from a development and a tanking purpose, you know, maybe next season might be even more important given the ramifications that may be in play there if guys like LaVine and Dunn don't take the step that we hope them to do. So I should have mentioned, I'm not sure if I did mention before, but the fact that we're recording this whilst the second round is playing and the, you know, during the Bulls having their media press conference. So we maybe aren't necessarily all over the quotes that are coming through from Gar and Pax during their post-draft presser and the fact that they're carrying that on during the second round. But I wanted to get your take on that. What do you make of the Bulls having their post-draft press conference during, basically, as the second round, I guess, kicked off, the fact that they were addressing the media there and going through their selections? I didn't necessarily like the look of that, but I'm interested to get your take on it.
Yeah, the optics there, not the best. They basically started, I think, their press conference. It might have even been at the end of the first round. It's basically they took Hutchinson, that was their guy. If they made that promise, they were basically just waiting for him to be there, and they took him, and then they were basically, that's done for the night. Not the best optics, especially after what happened with selling the Jordan Bell pick last year. And the funny thing, bringing up the Jordan Bell thing, there were several reporters that tweeted about teams looking to sell draft picks and how teams were hesitant to, I believe, do that because of what happened with the Warriors and Jordan Bell this past year. So it's kind of funny that the Bulls might have had an impact on the second round and selling draft picks this year just because of what happened last year. But yeah, it's definitely not the best optics, and it's kind of a bummer because the Bulls did have a pretty good draft, and I don't want to be like a huge downer. And obviously not having second round picks, it's not a killer in your rebuild, but when you're rebuilding and possibly getting extra players and extra shots at guys that, I mean, you never know what a second round pick, what he could turn into. There were some guys that fell much further than expected. I know guys like D'Anthony Melton and Keita Bates Diop from Ohio State. Those guys fell pretty far, and those guys were guys that had first round grades from a lot of draft analysts. Those guys fall, I think, into the 40s. So it's kind of unfortunate that it seemed like the Bulls basically kind of packed it up once their 22nd pick was over and they weren't looking. I would hope that wasn't the case. I would hope they have other guys working behind the scenes, but it definitely is not a good look when your two main decision makers are out there basically doing the media rounds as the first round's ending and basically throughout the entire second round. I feel like a lot of fans have brought that up as well. It's not the best look, not the end of the world. That's so just kind of unfortunate that they did that.
Yeah, I know. And particularly when you think about if they just wait an hour or so, if they can avoid that whole perception, I guess. But I don't know. It's one of those optics things that probably doesn't mean a lot in hindsight. But in real time, I guess it's one of those things where you do slightly question why they couldn't just wait an hour and a half, something like that, just for the second round to play out. So, these sorts of logic doesn't rear its head, I guess.
Right. And I think it's just also because of just little things that have added up in this type of vein, like the Jordan Bell pick last year, and they talked about, oh, like we didn't have a player we liked on our draft board when it's a pick at the beginning of the second round. Like it just makes it seem like you're lazy. And then they had the whole thing with the European draft camp, and they made the excuse, and it was talking about how they didn't want to pay the whatever the camp fee, and they made the excuse, oh, we want all our scouts in here, blah, 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 when it seems like they had Chandler Hutchinson basically lined up already and that they liked Wendell Carter Jr. So like those kind of things, and just going back a few years, just kind of adding up in terms of optics and in terms of stuff like that, it just kind of grates on you a bit. But again, we're not gonna say sky's falling was the Bulls didn't get a second round pick. Obviously, that's not the case. The Bulls the rebuild can still succeed without the second round picks. But when a team is rebuilding and they don't have these extra chances, it's kind of unfortunate because this is two straight years. But the Bulls, they executed the rebuild last year. They go into rebuild, but that's 2 years at the beginning of the rebuild where they don't have a second round pick, and that's just kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, and they don't have one next season, I believe, either. I mean, in some ways, we're on brand here whining about second round picks, but it wouldn't be a Bulls HQ episode without at least finding some angle to get onto the front office.
We've been too positive, so we had to balance that out a bit.
We did. But let's close on a high. Let's end with, I guess, some more positives and the fact that you know, we both like this draft. I know there's, I've seen a lot of Bulls fans out there who, some of them, a lot of them who I respect, who, you know, whilst they consider this draft a decent one, they're not super high or super inspired about it. But in that way, I almost feel weird in the sense that I am being this overly high praise guy towards the front office, but I'm kind of content here. And like I said earlier, I didn't necessarily expect to be. But in terms of a grade, what would you give this draft for the Bulls?
I'd probably give it a B. Like I said, I'm not overwhelmed. I don't think they hit any home runs here. I could totally be wrong. These guys could turn out to be great. Obviously, the draft is a crapshoot, but just on the surface, they made solid, safe picks. They should help. The Bulls need as much talent as they can because they're still at a talent deficit. So that's a good thing. If they would have been able to maybe get into the second round to get a chance on a guy, or maybe if they would have been able to trade up and get a guy like Doncic, I'd probably give them an A. But the fact that they stayed at 7-22, they took two solid players that should be able to be a part of their core for the foreseeable future, and that they guys that I don't think will bust. I think they're guys that should help in the very least. That deserves at least a solid B.
Yeah, I think you're right on the money there. I wouldn't head towards an A. I think had they traded up and found a way to get someone like Luka Doncic, even though it was probably unlikely, that's when you get into that A territory. But I think I'm very happy with what they've done. A solid B is a good grade, and they can all fans should be very excited about this draft and how it sort of fits with the existing roster and what it potentially could unlock with the existing players on the roster. So I'm quite content. It sounds like you're happy about it too. Let me know, fans, what you think about this draft. Hit me up on Twitter at MKHoops and tell me what you thought about this draft. But Jay, have we missed everything? It sounds like we've covered everything for this draft.
I think we've pretty much covered. I guess if right now, assuming the Bulls don't do anything crazy in free agency, what do you, if you had to take a guess at how the Bulls would do next year, like just how many wins do you think they're looking at next year with the core that they have, and if they add around the margins in free agency?
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting because you mentioned before the fact that the draft lottery is changing in terms of the percentages applied to each pick in terms of the, you know, where those picks might fall. So I kind of almost want to wait and see how teams react to that, whether they care too much about that, whether those, you know, that active tanking that we sort of saw for the last month and a half, it almost felt like by basically 10 teams, whether that's as strong next season as it was this season. If it is, I think the Bulls could sort of slide into that 30 to 35 win range if they add a few veteran pieces of a similar standing to Justin Holiday, maybe one or two guys like that. I think they could win 30 to 35 games. But having said that, I could also see a scenario where they really sort of go to the well here with the younger guys, maybe move on from Robin Lopez at the trade deadline, maybe even Justin Holiday, both of whom will be expiring contracts at that point. Maybe they trade them at the deadline and really invest in the younger guys. So at that point, I could maybe see that number sliding down, but I probably would, at this point, I'd probably say anywhere between maybe 28 to 34 wins. How about you?
Yeah, I can't believe I've made a bet with a friend like all the time, just like over unders with Bulls wins, and I've won it by like one game this year. I think we were at 26.5, which is honestly kind of high. I was surprised that they won, and I think we made it for like 29.5, I think, for next year. So I'm feeling kind of confident that if they get to 30 wins, I would be surprised if they got that much more, because I still do have questions about how they're going to defend. And as much as we like the Wendell Carter pick, young big men usually are bad in the NBA to start unless they're like transcendent talents. And even then, they don't always contribute to winning. I mean, we've seen a guy, young teams that have super talented young players, but they're still really bad. I mean, we see like Karl Anthony Towns came in and put up huge numbers right away, but he's terrible defensively. So as promising as the Bulls take, they might look, they're still really young. They still have a lot of questions marked defensively. They still have to come together offensively. So they still have a long way to go. And one of the reasons why they won 27 games last year was because Nico played like an all-star for a couple of months. He basically added a bunch of wins by himself. They won a bunch of really close games that could just kind of toss-up games that easily could have been worse. Obviously, they also tried to lose a bunch of games late. But so there's definitely a chance where the Bulls could be around a similar amount in the high 20s, the low 30s, kind of like what you said. I would be shocked if they won more than like 35. I think some fans are going to be really optimistic about their chances because the East stinks and some of these guys and Lowry looks really good. And maybe if LaVine bounces back, maybe they end up getting a lot better. I would be surprised by that. So I'm kind of with you. Like I think low 30s win totals is a realistic expectation with maybe if they come together better, if they keep the veterans around a bit more, maybe they get into the mid to high 30s. I think playoffs would be crazy. But I mean, if the Bulls win in the low 30s, get another good draft pick, maybe they get lucky with these new lottery odds. But then the young guys show development and they show some cohesion as a group. I think that'd be a hugely successful season.
Yeah, I certainly agree. And we're both very positive right now. Maybe we're getting caught up in the moment, but we're coming on this podcast very positive. Not necessarily at CBE Fred levels, but we're working away from this as a good day here as Bulls fans. So look, Jay, thanks for joining me, my friend. We've pretty much touched on everything that I wanted to go through. I'm pretty sure your piece up on Betting Chicago is already up online, or BetChicago.com rather, is already online in terms of your takes of the Bulls draft. Obviously, we've heard them all now, but everyone go read that on BetChicago.com. Jay's put together a piece up there. Follow him on Twitter at Bulls_Jay as well. But mate, I appreciate you for jumping on, and maybe we can do it again sometime, maybe through Summer League.
Absolutely. We got Summer League coming up. We got free agencies coming up. The Zach LaVine free agency is obviously going to be the Bulls' big storyline there. So we should definitely do this again soon.
All right. So that was Jay Pat, folks. Go follow him at BullsJay on Twitter, as I mentioned before. But I also mentioned this guy before. His name is CB Fred. I'm bringing him on the podcast now for a little bit of a guest spot to give me his opinion of how this draft played out. I'm pretty sure if you've listened to this pod before, if you know Fred, I'm pretty sure how you know the next 15 minutes are going to sort of transpire. There are going to be some very positive Bull slants here. I'm tipping. I'd be very shocked if Fred isn't a few beers deep right now and is super excited. But let's hear from the man himself. Fred, how excited are you?
Oh, my God. I'm on cloud nine, I tell you, brother. I've had a lot of great nights as a Bulls fan. This one, you know, obviously the six titles when we won the lottery to get Rose. You know, Ben Gordon draft. There's been a lot of great evenings as a Bulls fan. I'm not going to get into that. You're not going to bring me down tonight. And tonight is up there to get Wendell Carter Jr., who I've been waxing poetic about for months.
Yep, you have been.
And then to see Bamba go the pick before, because I saw my life flash before my eyes with the thought of him coming to us. And to see him go to Orlando, the dumbest team, arguably, in the last 10 years, the last decade. It was just so fitting. And just to see this happen. But on top of that, I have been talking about it's my nightmare if the Sixers get Mikal Bridges. And, of course, they draft him. And you go into a long-winded tweet. laughing it up.
Oh,
and
then fantastic.
Just as my phone lost its power, announced that I was at Doug Tonis's house for the party. Excellent time tonight. God bless everyone who was there. The announcement comes, the Sixers trade Bridges. Oh, my God. I laughed so hard. My chest was hurting. And then luckily Big Dave from Ball was there. I'm like, get over here, my man. You got a tweet for me. You got to send a tweet out. I told you to pound sand, but you know I love you. I'm not going to be negative tonight. And I want to give a special thanks to my opening act, Jay, tonight. Jay's a great guy, and I'm glad that he was able to give his thoughts beforehand. But I'm here to let everybody know this is a great night in Bulls history because we just pretty much locked up title number 7.
I honestly don't know where to start with that entire rant. But, maybe we just start with the fact that the 2020 parade, the championship itself, it's still on plan. It's still on track, rather, according to CBE Fred. Things are still going as planned. I'll be seeing you in Grant Park in 2020. Wendell Carter Jr. and Chandler Hutchinson, they're the big pieces that are going to be leading the Bulls to a title. Is that what you're telling me, Fred?
I can't wait. I think the ceiling for Carter Jr., in all seriousness, and I've been making this case for months, I think the ceiling for this kid is much higher than what people have kind of – I'm so sick of, he's the safe pick. He's the right pick. It's not safe. He does everything well. The only question mark you would have is potentially his lateral quickness. And I heard Garin Pax address that tonight on the post draft show. He's 19 years old, and they felt like I guess the training staff can address that to some degree. That was the only potential fault in this game. But I, as I argued in watching the tape, and I watched hours of tape of that guy in Bamba, I did not see any noticeable additional lateral quickness from Bamba over Carter. Carter was a much superior shooter, a far superior passer. He's, a fundamental defender. And when they played against each other, Carter just manhandled him. You know, Mark, one thing I always took from my younger days playing high school basketball is, you know, I was a fantastic player. I don't like to brag, but I was very good. And as Doug Tonis can attest, no one can shoot like me. But one of the things that they had me doing was playing the power forward position at like 170 pounds. I was like 6 foot, 170, which is just, you know, ridiculous. It's absolutely true. I'll pull out the yearbook. How dare you? Anyhow, I played the power forward position. And the one thing I'll always remember is before the game, I would look at who I'd be playing against and their weights. And let me tell you, 30 pounds of muscle is – I remember playing a guy who was about 210. I felt like I could handle him, and I did handle him. Then I played a guy who was 240. The difference in 30 pounds of muscle, you can't even comprehend it. It's just I had no chance. And I think when you look at Wendell Carter at 255, basically the same height, and you look at Bamba at 225 soaking wet, that's a massive difference in being able to stick a guy like Embiid. And I call Wendell Carter Jr. Embiid Kryptonite. I think that's a guy you got to go through, and he's a guy who can guard Embiid, whereas, you know, Bamba can't. One elbow from Embiid in the Bamba's chest, and his kidneys end up in the 200 level is what I've been saying. He just can't guard a guy that big.
Well, I mean, we don't need to rain on, you know, Mo Bamba's parade to prop up Wendell Carter Jr. I think your point's taken. Ignoring your throw in there of your high school career, we don't really need to hear about that. But look, I think
we'll have an hour episode on that one, maybe. Let's set some time aside for that.
What I learned. I don't know if my listeners need to be hearing about your high school career, but I think you made an interesting point, though, about, you know, the perception that this pick is a safe pick. And I agree with that. I think it is a safe pick, but I think at the same time, there's two truths here. It can be the safe pick, but also the best available pick. I'm actually quite content with how the draft played out. And whilst I, you know, understand why some fans might see this as a safe pick, I think that almost is a positive for Carter Jr. because it represents the fact that this guy doesn't have a lot of holes in his game. Yeah, the lateral quickness might be an issue, but everything else, I'm pretty confident in this guy being a really good pro. So yeah, his ceiling may not be as high as DeAndre Ayton or something like that. But if the Bulls wanted a player like that, really, they really needed to find themselves with the first or second pick. But with pick 7, I think the Bulls have done as well as they could have. And whilst I'm not necessarily as high on you, or high as you rather, in terms of where this team may be going from a ceiling perspective, I'm sitting here quietly content with how this draft played out.
I love it. I can tell you're on board. You're on the big red bus. One thing I will say, I listened to your show with Ricky O'Donnell, which I will begrudgingly admit was fantastic. Just absolutely fantastic.
Well, thank you for that, Fred.
He did a great job. And even you, I will admit, made some excellent points. And one of your points, which I happened to nod quite viciously on, was the point that you made regarding, you know, the Bulls, maybe they can do a little bit of both, is drafting for need and drafting for the best player available. And that was kind of like what I believe Wendell Carter was. There's a clear need there at the 5, right? A guy who can kind of cover up some of Laurie's, you know, faults, for lack of a better way of putting it, I guess. I mean, I just think he really complements Lauri Markkanen really well. And he did that for Bagley at Duke, and I think he's going to do something similar for Lauri at the NBA level. The area I disagree with a lot of people on is, I think, to me, out of all the bigs I saw, I think he was – even Jaren Jackson Jr., I would say that I think Wendell Carter has the ability or the ceiling, the shooting ceiling, to be better than any other big. I think he shot 40% last year, not a tremendous amount of attempts, but I thought his form was so fantastic, and he's only 19 years old. If that kid could eventually be a 40-plus three-point shooter a la, you know, Al Horford this year, then you're going to have a 4 and a 5, and the best combo, shooting combo, at the 4 and a 5 in the NBA. The only one I could probably think of that has two guys that are capable of being 40-plus. And in doing so, you've created a team that's just going to be runways to the rim for Dunn, LaVine or whoever you want to bring in at the three or the two. And I just think that is where the NBA is going. Being able to pull out an Embiid, being able to pull out the better defenders in the NBA and opening space for the rim wreckers and the attackers is just huge. And you get a kid on a bargain contract now for many years to come, and he's so young. He's almost a year younger than Bamba. I don't care how many jumpers Bamba made in an empty gym. That all changes once you go out on a court with, you know, a crowd and people, the actual defenders. And he just wasn't even in the same stratosphere offensively as yeah, Wendell Carter.
Back to Bamba you go. You just had to find a way to work in the Bamba sound again. But no, I think you made some fair points there. And you know, I'm quietly content with this pick. And it almost sounds like, and I could be wrong, but you listen to people talk or you just see tweets on Twitter, and I'm kind of not sure if people fully understand what Wendell Carter is or what his game is. And they almost talk about him as this big, lumbering, defensive big, in the sense that he's Robin Lopez or something similar to Robin Lopez. And whilst there are a lot of similarities with Lopez in terms of how important someone like Carter Jr. may be to someone like Lauri Markkanen, like you said, mm-hmm. Wendell Carter projects to be a really, really good jump shooter. And yes. I just wonder how much a pick like Wendell Carter Jr. himself, even though he isn't necessarily a sexy pick himself, I wonder how important he's going to be or how much of a key he's going to be in unlocking some of these Bulls players that are already on the roster. I'm thinking about, obviously, Lauri Markkanen and the fact you're putting him next to a really good rim protector, a dominant rebounder, but also guys like Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine who weren't terribly efficient last season, but mm-hmm. now that they're able to play with a spaced out center, someone that could set them really big, strong screens and really hit that offensive glass, I kind of wonder if he's going to be super important for their development as well. So I don't know. Oh, yeah. I think this will be a pick that the Bulls fans, while some aren't in love with this pick right now, I think in time they're going to learn to love it. And I'm really happy with the pick itself.
You touched on a point I just got to follow up on because I think it is huge. And it's something, you know, one thing I realized in this whole draft process, it's been like 10 years since I spent an insane amount of time on any pick in the top 10. The Bulls really didn't have we had no idea they were going to have a chance at 7 for Markkanen. And then, you know, before that, the only time I ever spent a lot of time on top 10 was when Noah was drafted. That was really the last time they were in the top 10. So this year I got back down to it and spent a ton of time. And the two things that hit me about Carter in watching a ton of tape on him is, number one, he's a much better passer. He's a fantastic passer for a big man. I was really surprised at how good he was at that skill. So that's going to help everyone, you know, not just as you touched on, it's going to help LaVine, Dunn. Having a big man that can pass is a big plus. And number two, the setting screens. He's 255 of solid granite. He sets excellent screens. And I think that's obviously going to help LaVine. And that you could do a pick and pop with him. You could do a pick and roll. I think they're really kind of – he's been undercut in two areas. He's been really just, I think, underrated in two areas. And one would be shooting. And the other one is definitely athleticism. I think he's a much better athlete than he's been given credit for. People act like he's just a big lumbering dope, you know, because he's a center at 255. You hear that. He is a good athlete. So I am – I know you're high too. I know you're trying to keep it in and try to be professional, but you secretly are just ecstatic about this. And you know, this was a great night. And to top it off too, Tibbs had a chance to get Hutchinson's and he pooped his pants. So, I mean, this is just great. It's been a double whammy.
Well, Tibbs got who I wanted. Tibbs picked Josh Okogie. So I was actually kind of disappointed about that in the sense that I really wanted Okogie, but at the same time, I'm not down on Hutchinson. I think he can be good. I'm not necessarily enamored with the fact that they made a guarantee for him, but I think he can be good. And for pick 22, I'm hoping he can be good at least.
Yeah, I don't understand what everybody – why does everybody care about that? I don't know. Of course you don't understand. Why does it matter if they made a guarantee or not? First of all, who knows if they did? Number two – is there some kind of legal contract that they would have to keep to it? I have a feeling Michael Porter fell any further, they would have taken Porter. And that's a, you know, big deal. If it's the right pick and they made a promise, that's all I care about. And I think he was a excellent choice at that point, and he fills a need at the three. I don't. The only thing I disagree with, I don't think he's a shooting guard. I think he kind of projects more out of three.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, they had him as a shooting guard. He's a little bit light maybe, but overall, I think he's going to be a nice guy to just slide in that role. That's the only spot we really had that was, I thought, kind of a a hole now. You know what I mean? I mean, definitely at the three. But if you look at the team now, I mean, if we sign Paul George, I'd say this team is top four. And then, you know my mantra, 7 pick last year, 7 pick this year, 7 seed next year, 7 title in 2020. So that's how I roll.
A deck full of sevens. There you go. You've heard it here from CBE, Fred, people. The Bulls prophet himself. He's predicting Paul George. He's predicting the 7th seed next season and the 7th ring the season thereafter. So you've got this podcast on record to just let Fred know how that's progressing. You can be sure that I'll be letting Fred know over the years how his predictions are coming along here. You can be certain I'll be doing that. But Fred, I'm glad you enjoyed yourself tonight at the draft at Dogs. Kind of wish I could have been there in Chicago, but unfortunately, time zones and, you know, thousands of miles probably couldn't make that happen. But maybe one day we'll get there to Dogs for the draft party. But in lieu of that, I'm glad to hear you had a good night. I'm glad to hear that the 2020 campaign is still on track after this draft. So, look, I'm sure we'll touch base over the off season and the coming season. I'm sure I'll have you on later on throughout the year on Bulls HQ to get your thoughts on how Wendell Carter Jr. and how Chandler Hutchinson are fitting into this team. But I'm pretty sure they're going to be glowing remarks as to how they're performing anyway. So, but look, I appreciate you jumping on here high after the draft, my friend. And even though I don't think you will be right, I kind of hope you are.
Well, I just can tell you right now, I cannot wait till that summer evening, June 2020, where you and I embrace at the Grant Park party, and then we head over to Gibson's to have dinner with Gar and Pax, and we all discuss what a great ride it's been the last few years.
Yeah, that would be a riveting conversation, that one. I can guarantee you that. But
One last question for you. I got to know what we were...
I'm definitely editing this part.
What were the Sixers thinking tonight?
What do you mean?
Did you agree with that move?
I thought it was a fantastic move, Fred. An absolutely great move.
Why?
Well, because they got a player that probably is going to be better than Mikal Bridges, in my opinion, and they got themselves a 2021 unprotected first-round pick. So, a great move.
I don't think Smith, though, shoots a three very well, right? I mean, that's what they need. They need outside shooting.
Not yet, but he's a fantastic athlete, projects to be a great defender. I don't know. I think he's going to be really good, and a 2021 unprotected first-round pick from the Miami Heat. I think that pick has a lot of potential as well, so I'm into it. I felt sorry for Bridges, but like I said, it's a good trade for the Sixers, the Sixers are still marching ahead.
No, now that we have
of course.
Embiid kryptonite, we're going all the way.
Right, of course. I forgot about that. Fred, thanks for joining me, my friend, and we'll catch up down the line.
Have a good one, brother. Bye bye.
So that was CBE Fred, folks. You probably know already, but follow him online at CBE Fred on Twitter. You can obviously catch him on his own podcast, the Chicago Bullseye podcast, as well as the Big Red Bus there with Doug Tonis. Always fun having Fred on. He's a bit of a lunatic, but that's why we love him. Very, very optimistic Bulls fan, and obviously very happy with how the pick itself sort of transpired there for the Bulls. But look, that pretty much wraps up this podcast. I'm actually pretty happy, as I've sort of stated already on this pod. I'm pretty content with how the Bulls have played this thing out. It remains to be seen how these guys develop, but at the time of the draft itself, I'm happy. I think this is a good draft. The Bulls have made several good decisions here, so all is well heading into free agency. And speaking of free agency, I'll probably be back in another week's time or so previewing free agency. Bulls probably won't be big players in it in the terms of signing some big names, but they could be very important in terms of how the league shapes itself. They're one of the few teams to have cap space, so they could be very important in terms of being a trade partner in the sense of maybe taking on some bad contracts or receiving some future picks of these sorts of things. So whilst the Bulls probably won't be landing a Paul George as Fred hopes for, they could still be very relevant players here in free agency. So I'll be back again in a week's time, but I hope you guys enjoyed the draft. I hope you guys enjoyed this reaction pod. And in the meantime, follow me online on Twitter at MKHoops. Follow the podcast on Twitter as well at BullsHQPod. And as I said, we'll be back again in a week's time to give you a little bit of a primer there for free agency. So be on the lookout. That'll be in all your podcasting feeds very soon. But again, thanks for joining me. And good luck to Wendell Carter and Chandler Hutchinson. Here's to hoping for two long successful careers for both Bulls, and fingers crossed they may be part of the next Bulls championship. So as I said, I'll catch you guys next week, and thanks again for joining me.